through salary reviews, and Carl did okay. Money will buy you anything, even friendship. We'd like to, and I'd like to, share with you perhaps a rather personal approach to sustainability. Because fundamentally, I don't have any choice. It has to be sustained. Can you imagine the grief, the hardship, the turmoil that would occur if we didn't sustain our business? And I have to be home with Deirdre every day. She'd kill me. So sustainability means different things to different people. And sustainability, particularly in turbulent times, brings out different things. Brings out the best, it brings out the worst. But most important, it brings out character. And it's character that will carry us forward. Your character. So is it danger? Is it a time for opportunity? Or perhaps it's simply a time for character. Data. July the 19th, way back in 1989. And we had the first of three tragedies. The first one occurred in a field in Sioux City, Iowa. The DC-10 crashed, and 111 people died. A mere few days later, we had a repeat, this time in Tripoli, in Libya. The DC-10 went down, and with that, 80 people died. One single 24 hours later, another DC-10 left Rio en route to Toronto. And the captain came on board, and he said, "We have lost our undercarriage. Get ready for a crash." Ladies and gentlemen, I was on that. And so was my 11-year-old boy. I said, "What's a crisis? What are you going to do? I've never seen so many people saying the Hail Mary, praying. I've never seen so many people crying, weeping on a flight from Rio to Toronto." So that was a crisis, but also surely it was a time for leadership, just like now. Time for leadership. As you think of what we are going through, it's amazing. Everywhere we look, everywhere, we see recession worries, we see doom and gloom. And sometimes I wonder, how are you? Why bother getting up in the morning? I mean, if you were to listen or believe what's in the papers, I think you'd stay in bed. Recession appears to be everywhere. The dreaded knees, bankruptcy, and bailouts. Bailouts. When I came to the United States, they once told me, I said, "What is the nature? You're going to get a call early in the morning, and somebody's going to call you and say, 'You know, I need help. I'm in jail. I need a bailout.'" That's what a bailout was. But now, of course, bailout means something totally different. We bail out banks. We bail out companies. Bailouts. We can bankrupt Great Britain. 340 people bankrupt every day. 95 companies. We were bankrupt America. 5,945 people go bankrupt every single day. Where exactly are we going? Where exactly are we going when it takes us 98 pages every single day just to list these poor unfortunates who have gone bankrupt? The United States alone, 600,000 people lose their job every single month. In the United States alone, there are 24 million people without work. But even worse, within that 24 million people, there are people who are so despondent, they don't even wish to apply for a job. And of course, this 8.9% unemployment that we have is dwarfed by Spain. Dwarfed. With over 17% unemployment. And in my own home, in Ireland, the so-called Celtic tiger, the fabled tiger, the way forward, well, the Celtic tiger is dead. And the Celtic tiger has been laid to rest. And our people cry out. They cry out for one thing. They cry out for leadership. And what do? We respond. We respond by printing money. Lots of it. Lots and lots of it. Imagine, you take a $100 bill, and a $100 bill weighs about 1 gram. And you take all these $100 bills that they are printing, it would be 10,000 tons of $100 bills. It means $10 for every man, woman, and child who have ever lived on the face of the earth. It means a tower of 60,000 miles high with $1 bills. Is that the way out of a crisis? To print your way out and then wonder when or how we want to pay for it in the future. And yet our banks are closed. Our banks are closed to businesses. Our banks are closed to new loans. When the loans aren't there, innovation stops. And when innovation stops, companies are not formed. And when companies are not formed, jobs don't get created. Is this the way out? Our own company. We had this wonderful idea about biorefining, this wonderful idea which would revolutionize agriculture, not just in America, but around the world. Wonderful idea. In fact, our government gave us $40 million. Yankee dollars, guys, cash. And yet, we can't go forward because the banks won't give us the balance. And so it stopped. Innovation stops, job creation stops, and cash flow stops. So where do we go? What do we want to do? You know, I'm reminded of the song. Remember that old song from Bob Dylan? Do you remember it? Let's sing it together. Oh, changing ways of doing things. Crisis brings out the best in people. So let's work to see how can we bring out the best in our team and how can we make that team sustainable. You're 27 years old. You're at the height of your career. The world is in front of you. The world is your oyster. And you're stripped of your title. You're almost stripped of your citizenship. But still you believe and still you have confidence. You're 10 years old, you're sitting in a wheelchair, a crisis. You've got braces, you can't move. A few years later, you get out of those braces. A few years later, you begin to run at 14. A crisis. But not a crisis if you believe. And this young lady believed. She had confidence. And that's what we need to get out of our crisis. Belief. The strongest power out there is the power of belief. And if we believe in ourselves, we can make things happen. But without belief, nothing happens. Belief comes before performance. You cannot perform, be it on a football field, be it in a basketball court, be it in tennis, unless you believe. This young lady saw not braces, not a wheelchair. She saw Olympic gold. I mean, how idiotic, how crazy, how stupid, how naive was that belief? This guy saw not discrimination, but determination. And he was not going to be held back. Wilma Rudolph went on to win not one gold medal of a wheelchair, three gold medals. And by 22 years old, she was the fastest female on the planet. All through belief and determination. Muhammad Ali, the greatest, came back and at 32 years old, regained the championship and went on to even greater heights of achievement. He believed. They believed in themselves. They believed in their potential. That's a simple question for you. Do you? Do you really believe that in your potential? Because if you don't, we have nowhere to go. We have nowhere to go. The you see every single morning, the you see is the you will be. The you see is the you will be. In normal times, we have a manager. Now, please do not use this phrase. It is not a way to put your career forward. But let's face it. In normal times, a monkey could be a manager. The little, hey, I heard this Irish American guy, and he said a monkey could be a manager, Mr. Manager. It's not a way to win friends and influence people. But the fact is, we don't have normal times. Well, the fact is, we need leaders. Somebody who will bring belief, who will bring conviction, who will bring confidence. That's what we need. It's always what we needed at these times. So we're on that plane. And we're going into Toronto. And my son says to me, Dad, what do I do? And what do I say to him? I said, Mark, don't worry about it. Happens all the time. We should go. And when we landed, that's another story. His mom watched on television. She said, what did your dad say? We said, it happens all the time. Read your book. And so I did. That's the leadership of a parent. That's no different to the leadership of a business. Have belief. Leadership brings security. And that's what I was bringing to this 11-year-old boy. Regardless of whether I felt secure, I brought security to an 11.
board. A leader brings certainty in a time of uncertainty. Certainty in a time of uncertainty. When we go out that door, we need to have certainty. Regardless of what we think inside, if you're going to succeed, you have to have a belief of certainty. And you can't just believe. You have to radiate that belief. That stupid guy. Yeah, he believes. But he's so stupid, he may just do it. And I may just march with him. Radiate your belief. And as you radiate your belief, set out those objectives. The objectives that you believe in. Set out your objectives. Our objectives are really quite simple. Education, innovation, traceability, have a brand, and pull the team together through a cause. And you may have slightly different things, but fundamentally, most successful companies have these pillars, have these beliefs, have these targets. Education. Education is fundamental. It's fundamental to our business, it's fundamental to our industry, it's fundamental to our children. Education. And education starts with little people. And with these little people, we can achieve anything. In middle school. Because in these areas, with these little people, their mind is like a parachute. You got a 6-year-old child. You have a 7-year-old child. What's the single word they use all the time? Drives you mad. What is it? Why? Why, Mom? Why, Dad? Why? So trying to use it. Why? Don't. You. Shut up. And your mom. With this parachute, and the ability to open this parachute, their minds, and let ideas flow freely, we have to create the scene for that to happen. And so we are committed and happy for some time. To build one laboratory in one school every single year. And if there's one thing that has given us satisfaction, that has given us a sense of achievement, is to see the response of these children. When they write to you little letters like this, and I could paper the walls, every single wall around here, and still have letters left over. And these children are now moving forward, and we get a letter saying, I cannot wait to experiment in the science lab. I cannot wait to experiments in the science lab, and that's your reward. I cannot wait to do experiments in the science lab. And talking about that, you must carry that enthusiasm all the way through high school, through universities, and we do precisely that. And then we move on into the university with our young scientists board. We start with this like little embryo thing, like a small acorn into a big oak. We started with 86 entrants from years ago, and now we have 2,000 every year. How many of you were impressed by those singers last night, barring the last one? Were they magnificent or what? But that started just a little acorn, and is now the biggest operatic competition for undergraduates and postgraduates. Not in the United States, but in the world. Little things go into big things. And last night, you had your reward, and I certainly had my reward with those wonderful singers. And you will hear some of these young, up-and-coming scientists tomorrow when we announce the winner of the 2019 2009 Young Scientist Award. Has it worked for us? Education is fundamental for us. Absolutely fundamental for us. My mom, God bless her, could be described as many things. She was loving, she was caring, she was all the things a mother should be. But one word, describes her best. She was a dictator. A total and complete dictator. You would get educated. End of story. And so we got educated. So it's worked for us, and we've carried that dictatorship through into our company. 150 young people have done masters and PhDs with us. And we're very proud of that. And they haven't all stayed with us. They've gone into other industries. They've gone out into the big world. We're very proud of what they've done. And those who stayed with us, and indeed those who didn't stay with us, all of their work has driven our sales. One step at a time, one degree at a time is what Declan said. But we started with $10,000, and now we're $500,000 through our education efforts. We believe education gives us innovation, and innovation separates us. And innovation will benefit you, benefit our industry, only if we embrace it. And the biggest challenge of our industry is not the lack of innovation, it's the lack of ability and desire to embrace that innovation. The lack of desire to embrace that innovation. As we think of innovation, maybe it's time to redefine nutrition. And maybe all that least cost formulation hasn't exactly worked for us. And it hasn't exactly made us a raving runaway success. So maybe it's time to redefine nutrition. And perhaps nutrition would be redefined by this little guy. This is the gene chip. And on this gene chip, we have 30,000 to 40,000 genes. It's a genome. And on this gene chip, we perhaps have the history of our industry and the future of our industry. Because it's with this gene chip that we have the tool for innovative breakthroughs. We have the tool for innovative breakthroughs. Let's think about it. What we have to do is look at the gene and see what gene lights are switched on and what gene lights are switched off. And with this gene chip, we can find that out exactly. And so we have these patterns. And by using these patterns, we can search for alternative, less costly ingredients. Okay, so we have a typical diet. Corn, soya, and fat. Typical diet, the world over. And those are the three most important and three most expensive ingredients in that diet. What's the fourth? The fourth invariably is vitamin E. The fourth invariably is vitamin E. And we have this sort of embedded thing in our brain that we have to have so many international appearances of vitamin E. And when things go wrong, we double it and triple it because it's embedded. We don't need to do that. If we look at vitamin E and we look at all the molecular functions that vitamin E does, now we have a blueprint. Because what we have to do is match the vitamin E blueprint, the vitamin E lights which are turned on and lights which are turned off, with our alternative. And I said to Professor Gossel, you know, I got a problem. And he said, "What's your problem?" I said, "You're my problem." He said, "Why am I your problem?" I said, "You cost too much. I need something. It's what you need." I said, "We've got this, and I can't even read the words. What can I do?" He said, "Let me show you what you can do if you believe." I said, "Show me." And he came over to a product called a Connex. Okay, now let me get back to my level of science. When vitamin E goes into a diet, it does different things. One of the things it does is retains the color of meat. My level of science. Two nails. One nail of iron rusts, and it goes brown. You with me? This is not 101 science. This is, I don't know, minus 99 science. The nail goes rusty, trust me. Goes rusty. The meat also goes rusty. And the iron in meat is in myoglobin, and that's what's responsible for the red color in muscle. So the key is now, how do we in fact keep the meat red? How do we keep that nail from going rusty? It's a very experiment. They put in up to five times the NRC level of vitamin E. And here we have. And now we're looking at the color. We have 1/5 the level of vitamin E. The color stabilizes. We have 5 times the level of vitamin E, and the meat starts rusting. And the gene chip has now told us how to remove 80% of your cost of the 4th most important ingredient in your feed. The challenge is, and the question is, are you going to be a naysayer, or are you going to embrace this incredible innovation? And now we're dramatically lowering our costs. And now it's happening. You've got to believe. Because it's only if you believe in innovation and you encourage its early adoption that you will separate yourself from the herd. Setbacks. Some of the banks came and said, "Hey, Pierce, very sorry. We're giving you no more money." He said, "Okay. Do we drop our biorefinery? Absolutely not. We take those components, which is so important to it, the algae and the SSF, and we march forward with those. So we're ready when the crisis is over. We're ready. We're ready to use algae to capture energy. We're ready to use algae to capture carbon dioxide. We're ready to use algae to create nutrients. Carbon credits and protein and biofuel." And if you want to explain and talk and discuss it, go to the exhibit outside where a young scientist would be delighted to get passionate and enthusiastic about algae, because it could be part of our future. And SSF, it's not like cellulose into biofuels, it's cellulose as a new raw material. Think about it. I give you a ton of grain, 1 ton of grain, and you have 100 units of energy. I give you 1 ton of corn stover, or fiber, or switchgrass, and theoretically has 90 units of energy, but there is a target. And our young people with their PhDs and their passion and their can-do and don't take no for an answer attitude have done something. And they start to release energy from that fiber, which can save you as much as $23 per ton of feed. But will you use it? And there's the question again. All driven by our young PhDs. I believe in them. I believe in our PhDs. I believe in our young people. And I believe that if you motivate them, they can move mountains. They can tackle our challenges, whether they be antibiotics. As we redefine growth promotion. And we have and are redefining growth promotion. And that has led us to a radical action. Doing all the things that the antibiotic did and more. And now also covered by patent. The mycotoxins, the hidden killer on farms, the hidden killer in our wines sometimes, the hidden killer, heaven forbid, in beers. There is only one beer on the face of this earth, which in my opinion has no mycotoxin. That's of course Kentucky Ale. And even if it does have mycotoxins, you'll be so good as mycotoxins are killing you, you won't even notice the difference. But the technology is there now to eliminate mycotoxins. New patents in technology and the environment. Why is it that we want to leave? What have the scientists done that you don't believe in? Why is it that when somebody such as Steve Leeson says you can use minerals at one-fifth level and get a better performance if you chelate them, if you pyroplex them, and his data is there and has been for years, why is it that you won't believe him? Why is it that you won't embrace that innovation? And the results would be fantastic because you can have lower costs, better performance, and lower pollution. Why is it? And politics, it scares the living daylights out of me. It scares the living daylights out of me. My name is on the door. My 2,000 people believe in me. It scares the living daylights out of me. When I see where some of our raw materials come from, would you buy from this quality control lab? Would you come and have a Starbucks coffee with me here? Not a chance. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, most of the minerals coming into our factory and the vitamins are coming from places which are as abysmal as that. We have to do something about it. And what we're trying to do, because my name is on the door, is we do 3 audits every year. I'm very, very suspicious. And we go there, we check you out. And despite all of that, we reject 33% of all raw materials that come to us. We have to be diligent. And we have to protect our reputation. I believe in young people. I believe in them because the results are so spectacular. I'd like you to join with me. Now, some of you are too old to remember these nursery rhymes. Do you remember the nursery rhyme about the blind mice? How did it go? Ready? 3 blind mice, see how they run. Come on. What's that? We'll start again. Ready now? 3 blind mice, see how they run. That's not. But there were these 3 blind mice, and they weren't running anywhere. But these mice, these are the groups of mice, in fact, were fed selenium in different forms. They were all challenged with cancer cells that produced brain tumors. This work was done at the Department of Neurobiology at the University of Kentucky. The first group that was fed sodium selenite died. The cancer cell fluoresced, as you can see here, growing it in the brain, the whole group died. The second group were fed the supposedly active ingredient, selenomethionine in yeast. And guess what? These 3 blind mice, they also died. But when you fed nature's form, Celtlex, these guys are still alive and well. The opportunities are enormous. If we feed our animals appropriately, the opportunities are enormous, and there's enormous opportunities for an older farmer. Our pillars. If we look at our pillars for traceability, how long will it be before we have a barcode? And in Thailand, there's a program called Spy on Me. And you literally go into the supermarket, and you have a barcode, and up comes where that meat came from, the animal. You can spy on me. Total traceability. And finally, branding. Now this gets exciting. A brand. We believe in our brand. And what better way to believe in our brand, and what better way to create our brand, than to get involved with the largest sporting event in the United States since the Olympics. The largest sporting event to come to the United States since the 2002 Winter Olympic Games. And it's coming back right here in Lexington, Kentucky. And you need to be talking to Alta and say, we need to run the symposium in September of next year. When Elizabeth Bagley will guarantee you tickets. Won't you, Elizabeth? No, no chance. But it's an amazing opportunity. First time in the United States, depending on who you talk to, between 600,000 and 900,000 people, 2,000 journalists, and the biggest movement of horses since D-Day, all coming to Lexington, Kentucky. And it's going to be a launch pad for you and for us for new products. And some of you saw those two new stadiums that the government has built, $100 million. In what was already the finest sports park in the world. Our games are coming to Kentucky. A launch pad for new brands. And here's Christina, now Her Majesty the Queen. This is surreal, guys. This is surreal. It started good, my dad was dead. Not really, but it started good. I wanted to join the British Army. I was accepted in the Royal Air Force. My dad said, no son of mine is ever going to fight for the Queen. And he must be rolling over now in his grave when he sees one of his sons sitting beside Her Majesty the Queen. It's surreal. But you know what? She was looking at our product, Life Force, and she said, is it legal? And I said, of course Your Majesty is legal. Okay. It's about branding. And without that brand of the games, we couldn't have done that. And nor could we do our freshwater salmon, and nor could we do our whiskey and our bourbon barrel ale and the bourbon, the bluegrass sundown you had last night. Life is for living and for believing. And that's what's happening. So our team and your team, we need a cause. Keep us together. And that cause may be the tsunami relief or the China earthquake. Kentucky didn't have enough money to build a classroom, and Altec didn't have enough money to build a school. So my colleagues in Southeast Asia came together, and together they built a classroom, they built a school. It's a cause. And when a cause, people come together. And as people come together, they can move mountains. They can do literally anything. And as you think of these things, now we'd like to have a new cause. And now we'd like to start a new legacy. And we're going to do so tomorrow. A new legacy. And hopefully, you'll be with us. We're launching the Altec Muhammad Ali Center for Humanitarian Funds. And we want to do one thing and only one thing. We want to inspire adults and children to be the best they can be. To inspire adults and children to be the best that they can be. And that's what Muhammad Ali wants to do. And that's also what we want to do. He wants to do it so he can create funds for education. We want to do it so we can continue and sustain our business. And tomorrow, you will have one of the highlights of your life, and certainly one of the highlights of my life, when right here, we will have the icon, Muhammad Ali, as we kick off this fund. As we kick off this fund, we believe that children and adults can be the greatest that they can be. So is it a crisis? Is it a crisis? Is it a time of Trinity? No, it's a time for character. Let's not let this crisis disfigure us. Let's make it transfigure us. Let's not let this crisis disform us. Let's make this crisis transform us. Convert the negative to a positive. Don't be a victim. Be a victor. Don't be a victim. Be a victor. Let's embrace these pillars, these objectives, your objective. Remember what Declan said? Write them down, your five objectives, and you're 10 times more likely to make them happen. Write them down. And as you write them down and embrace them, your ship, your life, your company will go into those turbulent waters, because that is what a ship was built for. To go into the turbulent sea now, to sit in some quiet, safe harbor. We believe in Belief Street. We believe in Dream Street. We believe that's what we're made for. We believe that's what we live for. I was interviewed by a 16-year-old a couple weeks ago. And he said, have you ever had a bad day? And I said, I've never in my life had a bad day. Never. Because we believe. We believe in turning bad into good. The future surely belongs, as Eleanor Roosevelt said, to those who believe in their dreams. Now, by believing, we'll make our future and your future sustainable. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you.